Well, hey everyone, welcome to The Boundless Show. I am Lisa Anderson. We love being with you. Happy fall to all of you. Let me give you a quick rundown of what to expect on this week's show. Later on for our inbox, we have a guy who wrote to us. He is allergic to cats, but his girlfriend basically said that she and her cats are a package deal. What does he do? Can this relationship be saved, people? This is what we want to know. So Dr. Paul Reiser is here to talk about the medical implications of all the allergy shots and whatever else he's doing, but also the relational aspect of this. Then for our culture segment, we have leadership expert Brad Lominick. He is the author of H3 Leadership, and he's going to talk to us about the three things that all leaders should be cultivating in their lives. And spoiler alert, they all begin with the letter H. So you can listen to that segment to catch that. For our roundtable, we have a fun roundtable today because the Physicians Resource Council here that works with Focus on the Family comes into our offices. I can't even remember if it's once or twice a year.
Twice a year.
Okay, whenever we can lure them our direction. And then when they show up here for all their meetings, we at The Boundless Show are like, can y'all just come on down and like dump on us all your wisdom and help this audience out with navigating a bunch of stuff? And so very privileged to have three docs with us at the table today. We actually have two family physicians and a cardiologist. So we have a breadth of knowledge here. So this will be really fun. Basically, Don, Paul, and Steve, welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yay. Dr. Don, Dr. Paul, Dr. Steve. All right. Well, we're going to talk about this is a fun segment because I was just telling these guys this is born out of conversations I have had with peers who are just quite frankly clueless about navigating not only a doctor's office, but just their own like lab work, their own understanding of even baseline like health things, like what they should be watching for. They're basically eating cheese puffs and Twizzlers for every meal. And so we're going to try to help you guys figure out so you don't die by 29, which, you know, y'all, this is a public service announcement for you. So we're going to try to break it down and give you guys some help with understanding the whole medical doctor 101 situation. So thanks, you guys, for being here. All right. First question I want to ask is just talking about wellness in general, because generally we're talking to young adults who are for the most part healthy. And they're like, OK, well, I just got this new job and my employer says that we get this wellness exam every year. But isn't that just a big waste of my time because I'm out rock climbing and hiking every weekend and skiing? So why do I need to do this? Why should a young adult saunter into and darken the door of a doctor's office early on in life?
At this age, you're not going to have quite as complicated a history, hopefully, as your older counterpart that gets that offer for the wellness exam and may have several more things to talk about. But it's worth at least getting, for several reasons, it's good to go. One is just to establish a home base. Get a family physician or internist, or it might even be a gynecologist for a woman who may be doing that job, as sort of the first line, first place to call, who gets to know you, your history, anything that's unusual, any meds you take, any allergy you have, and who can guide you on further decisions if you have something else you need to do. If you're just going to the urgent care every time something comes up, you're going to get a patchwork of care that is not very coherent, and it may be more expensive than if you go to that one person. Now, the question is, who can you see may depend on your plan. Whether you're in an HMO, you'll have a primary care, kind of a gatekeeper person who's your first stop. If you don't have that, then you need to find somebody. And then there'll be a question that'll come up later on about how do you pick one out. But assuming you've got one of those, if you go in and just say, look, I want a wellness check, they will probably give you some heads up of what things they're interested in. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be, depending on your age and your activities and your history, there may be, aside from just a basic exam and taking the history, there may be some basic lab, checking cholesterol, for example, and especially if you've got a family history of coronary disease, blood sugar, if you got a history of diabetes in the family. If you're overweight, then there's some other numbers that you may want to be aware of, or if you have any complaints, mm-hmm. they may need to be addressed as well. The one other thing that comes up is immunizations. What needs to be done? What's the current wisdom, depending on how far it's been since the last time. But a lot of people I see haven't been to anybody since they were 15. It's 10 years later. You know, they need an update on tetanus. We talk about flu. Not too many things they need, unless they're going to do a lot of international travel. And there's a bunch of other things they should be getting.
Okay. What about, let me have one of you other guys weigh in on this. How about just picking a doctor? I mean, I know some people that just flip through their HMO book. Some people ask on Facebook, like, who would you recommend? What do they need to know? And is it appropriate to go in to a doctor with the intent to, like, interview him or her, and then you just kind of, like, leave because you thought they were a jerk or something like that? I mean, what does that look like? Or vice versa. Maybe you're like, I don't want you as a patient.
If they're a jerk, they'll probably charge you for that.
Okay.
I think an interview is great, not an inquisition, mm-hmm. but a chance to meet a doctor and see if there's a certain amount of compatibility here. I like this person because I'm going to have to trust this person with not only my health information, but perhaps my health mm-hmm. in the future. So you want someone that you can communicate with.
Okay.
I think it's worth checking that out before you get sick.
Yeah. No, that's
great. Yeah, and I think really the question here is, what are you looking for in a doctor? What do you want that person to be like? And the answer that isn't necessarily intuitive, you might think about training or knowledge and experience, but really the answer is, what is that person like in terms of their character? Are they somebody that's really going to fight for you and fight to get you well if you're sick and seek out the best information for you? That's really what you want to know. And so if you ask your friends about doctors and they tell you, you know what, this guy called me at like 7 o'clock at night to tell me my lab results, that's a really good thing. If instead they say, I don't like that office, the receptionist is just really rude, that really doesn't matter compared to the importance of what the doctor is like.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, because I have a doctor who I normally wouldn't choose. He's super awkward. He never looks me in the eye. But I think it's just his personality. He's really good. He's the one that calls back right away, always addresses my questions personally, always is like calling in stuff on my behalf, you know, directly. And so I had to like let the whole, you know, he didn't have to be the funniest guy in the world or the most, you know, right. conversationalist or whatever. So that's a good point.
Good point. And how are your questions managed? Mm-hmm. Somebody asks a question, if you get blown off, if they're in and out like the white rabbit, you know, with a very important date somewhere else besides mm-hmm. your visit, mm-hmm. They're in a hurry. A lot of problems now because everybody's using electronic records, and most docs are madly trying to get the data into that thing, and it really takes some discipline to get your eyes off the screen and look at the patient.
Yeah.
And the more you sense that there's some empathic kind of conversation going on, that's a, you know, something to look for as well.
Interesting. I think, Steve, you had said at one point too about when we were talking before about someone who's willing to tell you the truth. I mean, I remember I had a doctor one time who pulled out this thing like, hey, I have this diet I want you to try. And I was like so offended. I'm like, hello, like, what are you telling me? Like, am I fat or what? And okay, so maybe I was like had an additional 10 pounds or whatever, but I was just so taken aback. But I ended up appreciating it because he was real, you know? He wasn't just trying to placate me.
You want a doctor who cares more about making you healthy than about making you happy. Mm. And you want a doctor who's willing to tell you the truth. One of the examples that comes up, I hear people saying all the time, well, I like going to this person because they'll give me antibiotics anytime I want them.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wrong answer. And they may like that, but that's not a good doctor because anytime you get antibiotics, you might get a yeast infection or you might end up with a resistant organism, or you might end up with an allergic reaction. And why should you do that if it's not going to help you? But a doctor who really cares about you is going to say, you know what, I know why you want antibiotics, but this is a viral illness, and it's not going to, if I give you the antibiotics, it's going to last 7 to 10 days. And if I don't give you the antibiotics, it's going to last between a week and a week and a half.
Okay.
And
okay.
The difference is you're not taking the risk. And so if someone's willing to be honest with you like that, it takes longer. Mm-hmm. It shows that they care more about you than they do rushing on to the next patient so they can see a bunch of people that day. They want to give good care with each person.
Okay.
Right. And a doctor who's willing to say, I'm not comfortable doing this for you, even though it might be what you want, because I think the risk of harm to you is too great, is actually being honest with you. But the other side of that is, if you want to find out if the doctor's honest, you need to be honest with the doctor as well.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk through what is going to get a patient, talk to our audience here, if they want the patient gold star from you, walking into an appointment, being on their game, knowing what to ask, what do they need to know and what do they have to bring with them so they're not just a big rambler wasting. I was sharing them with them a story of my mom, bless her heart. Mom, I know you don't listen to the show because you don't care. But just how my mom loves to tell stories and get, you know, and the doctors are like flatlining, you know, basically with all her info. What do we need to know about going in and getting the most effective appointment?
Somebody did a study years ago looking at doctors, watching them interview patients, and they discovered that the average doctor would listen to someone for about 7 seconds before they interrupted. Hmm. That's a horrible indictment of the doctor. Hmm. And a doctor needs to listen to what you have to say. And so if they're rushing you too much, that's probably a bad sign. Hmm. But on the other hand, you should think about what you have to say. You should have a story of what happened to you. When did it start? How did it start? How long has it been going on? What other symptoms have you had? So that's important. And it's nothing wrong with taking notes about that. And then secondly, if you have a past medical history, it's good to have the notes about it. If you've been somewhere else for care, you want to bring those records with you. If you're taking any medicines or supplements, bring them in their original bottles. Don't not know what you're taking. Or that's a recipe for someone giving you something that's going to conflict with it. And the other thing you need to do is to bring something to take notes. And if possible, have somebody with you, because you're going to walk out. I even do this. I'll go to the doctor and I walk out and I say, what on earth did he just say? And I even speak the same language. So you want to go out understanding their instructions to you about what to do for your health.
Which hopefully they'll write out or type out. Nowadays, there's a tendency for that, but sometimes it's kind of vague. One thing I always love is a patient who comes in with an actual agenda. I got three things, okay? I got my big toe sore, I got a drippy nose, and I'm having terrible headaches, okay? Now, if I get through the first two, and then I've got a few minutes, and now they come up with the headaches, or why am I tired all the time, or some rather daunting problem that needs a lot of questions, that's the thing I don't want to get at the very end. I'm going to arrange the, although I will ask, well, which one are you most worried about? If it's, you know, headaches, tired, and stomach aches, I want to know, well, which one's the worst or whatever. But if I know kind of, I'll reframe the whole visit around what I know they want to talk about. The worst, the three words you never want to say is by the way, or while I'm here, because those are the things that often are the, that introduces the real reason you're there many times, or that somebody comes in. And
it usually comes up at the end
at the
of
very
the visit.
End, you're trying to get out, and it's not a good thing. So the agenda and all that stuff Steve said, the different, you know, the information written out, handed to me, oh man, that's a gold star. You get a sticker and a lollipop for that one, but I don't give those because it's full of sugar, so we don't do that.
You don't give those? Do you just give like an apple?
I don't give nothing. One, I give I give a, I call my, I do what
you
I call
just give a, bill?
A laundry list. I call it my laundry list. I'm on the computer. I have a list. Here's what I want you to do.
Yeah.
And I print it out and I hand it to them. Everybody gets a laundry list.
Okay. All right.
And they even know to ask for it. Where's my laundry list?
Okay. How can a patient respectfully, like, what if they just don't even understand what you're talking about, or they disagree with something? Like, you're trying to prescribe a medicine, or you want them to do a test, you know, like, we're talking about like 20 somethings here working at Starbucks, and all of a sudden you guys are like telling them to do a $1,000 test somewhere. What? How
great
do you know?
No, that's a great question.
How do you know what to like push back on and what not to?
I think it's great to ask, tell me, you know, what's it for? What do I need to know? And, you know, how concerned are you that I get this? And, you know, if there's any questions about cost, or is there a way to do this more cheaply? If they're not covered and I want to get a chest x-ray, I'm going to send them to a place up the road that does it pretty cheap for cash,
okay,
as opposed to the place across that's closer that's more expensive. There's a lot of stuff like that. It's, you should always ask.
Okay.
Always ask if you don't get it, what's going on.
It's very helpful to say, how expensive is this? And if the expense seems a lot, say, well, are there alternatives?
Okay.
And sometimes the alternative is to watch the symptoms for a few days and decide whether the test really needs to be done. That can't be done in every situation, but there are many illnesses that can bear time before additional workup needs to be done. And so the doctor is in a position to help advise you on that. If you're very anxious about getting to the bottom of this right away, he's inclined to want to do more testing. But if you say, well, I'm willing to spend a couple days finding out what this is turning into, that may eliminate a lot of testing that could be done if you're both willing to wait.
Yeah. Okay.
As doctors, we go into medicine because we want to help people. We see ourselves as patient advocates and as teachers and educators. The last thing we want to do is to tell you to do something and you just nod your head and you come back a week later and hadn't done any of it. And the first thing we want you to do is to be engaged with your care.
Right.
And so if it's a good doctor, If it's not a good doctor, go somewhere else. But if it's a good doctor and you say, you know, I don't know if I can afford this or not, you know, what else can we do? Why are we doing this? They're going to want to teach you. And if you say, I know you just explained this to me, but I do not understand a word you said. Could you go over it again?
Yeah. Use some English instead of the doctor.
Right. And they may have someone else come in and talk to you, or they may give you a web resource, or they may do something else, but they want you to understand and they want you to get better.
Okay. So, again, so we're talking to, you know, hundreds of thousands of young adults who are extremely technology savvy.
Yeah.
Many are hopping on WebMD or they're going on to iVillage or whatever and trying to self-diagnose and possibly get alternative things. What would you say, you know, and this is where we, you know, you can feel free to take the gloves off. That person that is coming in and they're like, okay, well, I know I've just read all these articles about like traditional medicine and all you guys do is prescribe drugs and I want to go to my Chinese herbalist or I want to go to the chiropractor or I want to go and try these 12 supplements. You know, my audience knows I have rheumatoid arthritis. I want to go get bee venom injections or whatever, yeah. All kinds of alternative therapies. What's the best marrying of that so that you're not entering dangerous territory, but you're still giving people a chance to approach a holistic approach to medicine?
That's a really good question. And the proliferation of stuff on the internet does make it, it's a benefit and a curse because some of the sites are very poorly organized. They have way too much information or all the disclaimers and all the negative things. Oh, there's TV ads, you know, it's 15 seconds of why the drug is great and then 45 of why it's going to kill you.
Right.
And there's no understanding, there's no perspective built into that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are a lot of good sites to learn about a medication you're going to take and really, although some, I don't know, they tend to often have so many references to the negative effects that you need. One thing a doc can do is put in perspective. Here's what I actually see happens. Every drug can cause anything theoretically, but here are the two or three things that you might have to worry about. Mm-hmm. For a particular condition, make sure your sites are reasonable ones. Mayo Clinic is very good. The National Library of Medicine has one called Medline Plus that vets the articles and doesn't take you to, you know, really weird, kind of eccentric sites. Mm-hmm. The person who wants to get into the more alternative therapies, how I handle that will really depend. If they've got a really serious problem and I've got a pretty straightforward solution to it, I'm going to push harder against the alternative when I think that's not in their best interest. Mm-hmm. If it's something that's not that bad or there's you know, we have some time to play around and they want to do some other things, first, I'll say, okay, that's fine. There may be some, and if it's something I'm familiar with, I'll give them my perspective on it.
Okay.
But it again, this is all about the, you know, how much time have you got in that room with them is going to affect that conversation.
Cool. I can't imagine that in cardiology, you can be just playing around with a lot of time all the time.
I don't know, Steve, how much of that do you get?
I think because of the fact, well, first of all, you know, I make a choice to spend the time that I need with a patient. And that's what you want in a doctor. Someone says, well, yeah, I'm going to make less money because I'm not seeing 100 patients a day, but I'm going to give better care. But one of the things about my business is that, and one of the reasons I do cardiology, I like having people's undivided attention. Mm-hmm. And because so much of what we deal with is life and death, people really want to get it right.
There are good resources on the internet, but one of the scariest things you can do is start typing your symptoms into your browser.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And I'd really recommend against
that. I've totally done that.
Because the software that looks at that or even the retrieval that's done for a search is going to tend to emphasize the most severe possibilities, even though they're very unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things your doctor can help you through is navigate that whole sorts of things. Yes, there may be two or three very serious things that cause the kind of symptom you're having, but I know you don't have any of those because of the other things I know about you or about your symptoms. And that sort of thing is not something the internet's going to help you with.
Yeah, yeah. And the worst time to do that is on a Friday night when you then wait the entire weekend assuming you're going to die in like 5 days because you Googled something. Yeah. Right.
But that's not a new phenomenon. As medical students, we went through the same thing as we read about serious diseases and started imagining
we had
a symptom was something very ominous. So it's just human nature.
Yeah.
But the more you know about the spectrum of medicine, the more you can put those kind of concerns into perspective.
Yeah. Any final advice here as we wrap up? Anything that we didn't think of that you just know from your vantage point the patient needs to know, especially our folks?
When you think about young people, the habits that you build now are really important.
Mm. Yep.
And so I would say, so that you don't end up in my office 40 years from now with mm-hmm. a heart problem, you know, do the things that you know do right. Don't smoke, mm-hmm. exercise, eat a healthy diet, try to maintain an ideal body weight, mm-hmm. and get regular care.
I'm going to add to that, I will unabashedly tell young adults to save their sexuality for marriage. Mm. Have one marriage partner, have one sex partner in their life if they can do that. Mm-hmm. And I know that is not what they're being told, but I'm just telling you, from the medical side and the emotional side, mm-hmm. and not to mention the spiritual, mm-hmm. their life is a lot simpler mm-hmm. without that baggage.
Yeah.
And it really complicates things when you've got that into the mix. And I may be the only healthcare professional that said that to young adults, but I'm not afraid mm-hmm. to. Because it's good advice.
Yeah. No, good point.
But yeah, I agree with Steve. The lifestyle stuff is really probably more important on the young adults. Are they exercising mm-hmm. regularly? What kind? You know, how are they handling their sleep? Are they getting enough mm-hmm. sleep? They're trying mm-hmm. to get by in 4 hours, spending too much time in front of a screen instead of getting out and building relationships. A lot of stuff like that. We'll talk, mm-hmm. you know, if we have time, we want to talk about mm-hmm. lifestyle stuff even more than, you know, meds or prescriptions.
Good.
Right. Going back to your earlier question about the yearly physical. Probably the least important part of that is the actual physical examination. For a relatively young person, having a complete physical exam every year is probably overkill. The more important thing that happens on those periodic visits is the relationship you build with your doctor and making him aware of what health history you do have, so that now if there's an illness that comes up or something else you need advice on, you're dealing with a trusted person instead of a stranger.
Mm-hmm. I should add, too, that a lot of practices now are, especially if they're very busy or they're large practices, will employ nurse practitioners or PAs mm. of both genders who become like the primary care. We had a PA in our office who was like the doc for a whole lot of patients and still is in another practice now, but did great work. And, you know, we backed them up and consulted, but that's fine. That's mm-hmm. okay to do that if they seem to know what they're doing and they're giving you reasonable information.
Good. Thanks, you guys, so much for weighing in with all this great advice. I think super helpful for our audience as they get started.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.